Yesterday, a white supremacist was mistakenly listed as Donald Trump's delegate in California. Last week, Sweden saw neo-Nazi rallies in full force. And right now, the Austrian far-right party is leading the charge for the next governing party. These are just a few examples of the increasing influence of extremist policies into the mainstream. I asked Benjamin Riley, Dean of Sir Walter Murdoch School of Public Policy and International Affairs at the Murdoch University, whether it's a sign of a rise of the far right.
I think there is a shift to what we would think of as more extremist politics in a lot of Western countries, particularly the US, but also some European countries. There's two big reasons for that. One is we know that inequality has increased very sharply, particularly again in the US, but also in Europe and indeed in countries like Australia, so not to anywhere near the same extent as in the US, I should add, but there are proportionately more of the wealth in society is being held by a smaller group of people. In Australia, those people tend to be older people and younger people are getting screwed. But in America, where it's really extreme, you've got this 1% of the population owning something like 50% of the total economy and literally hundreds of millions of people who are, you know, what we would think of as probably lower middle class in this country. So that's one very fertile breeding ground for disenchantment with the existing system. And the other, of course, is the way the whole issue of race, ethnicity, religion, Islam in particular, has been heightened and politicized. And again, there's many factors for that. We can go back to 9/11, obviously, in the United States and elsewhere. We can look at the migration crisis that's currently taking place in Europe. And of course, in Australia, we've had a taste of it as well, because most of the boat people who come are coming from Muslim countries. The much larger group of illegal immigrants who are overstaying visas who come by plane in Australia are, I think the biggest group is Irish nurses, actually. We never hear about them.
They're the people we don't see.
They're the people who, you know, if media was serious and if the population was seriously concerned about the issue of illegals and people breaking the rules, we would also be having a serious conversation about that, but we're not. So I think this taps into, you know, very deep-seated anxieties that many people have. You know, some of these things are almost hardwired into us as human beings, to be suspicious of the other, to be very concerned about status differentials. And, you know, it's a potent combination, and we're seeing the consequences now.
And so the politicians who are getting traction now, the Trumps, the Geert Wilders, the far-right Freedom Party in Austria, they're all people who are playing into this and playing the populace.
Well, I think it's a mistake to just call this right-wing. You know, there are many elements of Trump's policies, for example, that are actually to the left of Hillary Clinton. But if we're talking specifically about the issue of xenophobia and thinly veiled racism, then sure, you know, it's one of the easiest ways to mobilize voters. It always has been, actually. What's different about politics in the US now compared to how things were previously is that Trump has kind of broken a lot of the unspoken rules about what you can say. I mean, you remember Trump came back to prominence. He was essentially a failed businessman and a reality TV show guy. And until he became the voice for claiming that President Obama was not a natural-born American citizen, that he didn't have a real birth certificate and so on. And Obama, in his first term, ended up actually producing his birth certificate because Trump was getting so much publicity for pushing this line. Really, that was about highlighting the fact that Obama doesn't come from a normal white background. He did have a Muslim father. You know, he does have a funny name. He is black. So a lot of these ways of highlighting racial difference have been very potent and very fertile. But there's also the case that in Europe in particular, there is something going on. The composition of societies is changing. European countries that have previously been relatively homogenous have seen a big inflow of migrants. There's a lot of popular anxieties about whether they can control their borders. These are not just purely manufactured issues. They're also real issues in terms of very quickly changing demographics in a lot of Western countries.
There's been migration in large numbers in history as well. What's making it so different for the populace this time around?
Well, because it's uncontrolled migration by and large. I mean, it's migration that is coming against the stated laws of most of these countries. It's coming, unlike Australia, you know, the thing in Australia is we can, if we're prepared to throw enough money at it, kind of control our borders because we're an island. Europe is not an island and hasn't been able to control its borders in the same way. It's not even clear that they want to control their borders in the same way. So, yes, of course there's been migration in the past, but I think large-scale, what we can call non-legal migration, because some of these people are indeed refugees, but not all of them, is inevitably going to raise public concerns. And, you know, I think we will see not only a rise of these sort of ultra-nationalist politicians, but a general shift to the right when the next round of European elections are held. Parties that are opposing migration are going to do better than they have for a long time.
And how do you think this is going to play into the discussion currently going on in Britain, who are considering separating from the EU?
It's been one of the dog whistles that the so-called Brexit campaigners have been using, that, again, if Britain is no longer part of the EU, then they'll be able to control their borders. The arguments are slightly different because Britain has had a lot of migration from places like India and Pakistan, including many Muslims, because of its colonial history. So in Britain, the debate is a bit different. It's about Polish plumbers and Romanians. But it's the same underlying issue of this concern about the other, concern about people who are different, concern about jobs being stolen. These are perennial issues that populist right-wing politicians have used for many years. And so in one sense, there's nothing new about this. But when you're at a time where people are concerned about their jobs and sort of heightened anxiety about terrorism, it's fertile ground for people saying, let's just turn our back on everything else and let's build a wall or, recreate the moat that is the English Channel and we won't have to worry about these issues. And, of course, in Australia, we have exactly the same appeal. That's what this whole issue about stopping the boats is about. It's a proxy for these broader concerns about immigration, some of which can be voiced, but in an immigrant society like Australia, a lot of which are voiced subtly through talking about a couple of thousand people on a boat rather than having a broader discussion about what it means to be a genuine multicultural society.
Do you think that's going to be fleshed out a bit in this election campaign, or is everyone going to play it safe?
Of course it's not going to be fleshed out because both the main parties don't want to have this discussion. The Labor Party doesn't want to have this discussion because it fears it will be electorally punished if it's seen as having any weakness on this issue, and for the coalition, it's one of the few things that they can claim that they've sort of done over the last couple of years. So, no, we won't be having much of a discussion on this issue at all beyond a kind of auction to see who can be more hardline on the issue.
Unless the Greens speak up too much.
The Greens have a different point of view, but to the extent that they can really insert themselves in the mainstream debate, they will be the voice of the alternative. But even for the Greens, I think there's a danger in being seen as being too left-wing on this issue because they have supporters who might be extremely concerned about climate change but might be also concerned about the idea of migration. A lot of Green supporters would like us to have fewer people overall, so I don't think it's an easy win for the Greens either.
Is it part of a cycle? Do you think that in the next decade we will see a strong rise of the left to counteract this action of the right, or are we globally heading on a path that is going to get more and more extreme?
That's a very good question, and I don't have a crystal ball, but my best guess would be that these ideas of left and right increasingly don't mean so much. As I said, many of Donald Trump's domestic policies would actually be seen as left-wing. In fact, that's one of the many reasons why there are concerns within the Republican Party itself about his nomination, not just because of all the outrageous things he said, but because many of his actual policy pronouncements are moving away from free trade and free markets. He's talking about raising taxes on some wealthier people. He wants to move away from the whole liberal, globalist, internationalist agenda, which conservative parties have championed. So I don't think these sort of terms left and right are going to mean as much anymore. And I think one of the reasons that people like Trump are doing so well is because they've thrown away the old rule book and they're mixing up. You know, they're saying some things that are very right-wing and xenophobic, particularly these issues that we've been talking about on race and so building walls and so on. But they're also saying things that appeal to the sort of white working class, a lot of whom are dependent on government benefit in the U.S., so I don't think the coherent idea of a left-wing and a right-wing ideology are as meaningful as they once were.
Benjamin Riley, Dean of Sir Walter Murdoch School of Public Policy and International Affairs at Murdoch University.